As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Today on the show, we have the one and only Noah Kagan. Noah was employee number 30 at Facebook and number 4 at Mint before founding AppSumo, and now Sumo. He tells us some of the stories of how he's made mistakes building Sumo, how he's gotten over them, and a bit about how he has built the incredible business he still runs today. Welcome to Rocketship.fm. In season 4 of Rocketship, we are diving into everything product and growth.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Sacca
and Mike Belsito.
All right, so let's jump into it. Let's start with, for anyone that might not be familiar, what is AppSumo?
So our company is called Sumo Group. We have two major products, AppSumo.com and Sumo.com. AppSumo is a daily deal site for small business owners. So we basically go out and find the best tools small business owners online need for their business, and we promote them at a great price.
Give me some of the background on how you got there. I know you founded this several years ago. You've been rocking it. You grew really fast. Where did the inspiration come from?
Well, you know, fast is all relative, man. And I think a lot about what I think about that is you never really see what goes on in the kitchen. You just taste the dish. And that's definitely how it's been for the business. It started really slowly. The inspiration came, I was working at a dating website. And what I noticed is that everyone kept saying, like, oh, I need more customers. No one ever was like, I need another payments provider. Oh, I can't wait till I have another, you know, share button on my website or what, you know, whatever it is. And yeah. I was like, all right, well, everyone needs these customers. Okay, that's part one. I really love marketing, right? I worked at Mint.com. I did all their marketing. I just love it. And then I was like, you know, there's this SaaS stuff that's coming out, like Dropbox and FreshBooks and MailChimp were coming out. I'm like, those are really cool. Something, this is a new wave I'm noticing. And then I saw Mac Heist and Groupon, which was like these new, like, time-based ways of selling. And so I was like, well, what if we take that product with that type of selling and I just do marketing? And, you know, that kind of that trifecta came together. It wasn't, you know, it's not overnight success, but definitely there was a good response to what we were doing pretty much initially.
Yeah. Yeah. How, so you say that there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. What did it feel like? I know what it looked like from this side, but what did it feel like on your end when you were getting started and ramping up?
It felt good. I actually did it at a really lazy pace.
Okay.
So I was putting out bundles. I didn't actually do deals singularly. But like once every other month, I would just go get a bundle of tools, like, you know, productivity bundle or design bundle or the Y Combinator bundle. And I would put those out about, you know, whenever I got around to them. And I think the thing that worked out well for people listening was that I worked backwards from customer bases. So I said, all right, well, how do I get on Hacker News? I was like, well, what if I got deals from all the Y Combinator companies? So I went out and got all those companies. And I said, well, how do I get designers to buy my stuff? And I was like, well, let's go get the best design tools or productivity. I read all of Lifehacker and I figured out which the most popular products. And then I put together the productivity bundle. And so I think being a little more intentional about like who the customer is, where they are, and then really creating something that I thought they would be excited about.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the mistakes, right? That we make when we're building products. Is there anything that comes to mind that, you know, maybe when you were building it, you thought this is going to be it. But when you released it, it didn't quite get the response you were expecting.
Oh my God. Everything. Dude, don't even get me started. And here's a fallacy. Here's the product development fallacy. The next feature will save us.
Right.
Never. The next feature is going to really save it. And, you know, shit, man, I'm still waiting for that to be true. I think for the most part, there's like the core of a business. And either that kind of works or it doesn't. Right. So we've done a lot of different things that hadn't worked. So like we'd launched a course called Monthly 1K showing people how we built online businesses. And it just did not sell for months. And we just had to keep reworking the core to be like, all right, well, what is really missing here? And so that just took time to figure out what that core was, which was like people needed fear. They needed smaller increments. But some of the things that we've put out just like have worked right away, like our King Sumo software. It was, you know, giveaways for WordPress. People just want giveaways. It works really well. We made a good price point. Sumo.com, our email marketing software. It was free. It was tools we were using. And it was just like people just wanted it. There wasn't anything else like that. But I think the point in all of this is that one, not everything's going to work. Almost nothing is going to work. And I do think ultimately most people don't have marketing problems. They have actually product problems. So do people really want what you have? Most people are building nice to have things, not must have things.
So how, obviously you guys hit on a niche, but did you hit on it the first time or did it take some iteration to get that business model that works for you today?
The main thing that I can share with others is that no business model is perfect and everyone iterates, right? So look at Apple. It's one of the easier examples, or even Tesla or Google. Everyone iterates. And I think that's where businesses fall, is that they're not taking their learnings or like, hey, what stuff is really working well and how do we expand on that? And so, you know, our business, we just have kept evolving. So with AppSumo, it was bundles of deals. And it was like, yeah, these bundles are good, but it takes me a month to get them. And then we only make a few thousand. And people don't grasp the value of it because they're like $5,000 in value for $90. I don't get it. And then we made them single deals. It was like, oh, wow, that's a good deal just by itself. And it was easier for us to do and more profitable. And then from those deals, we're like, well, what if we created our own software, which became Sumo.com? And then from there, we're like, well, crap. People actually just need core tools to run their business, which is what Briefcase HQ is. So BriefcaseHQ.com, which is one of our new products, which is it's all the tools you need to run your software. It's all the software you need to run your business for $49 a month. And that, you know, that's launching in 2 weeks officially. And it's just, you know, how are you looking at what's working and what, you know, the future of what your customers and the market needs, and then kind of keep evolving around that.
Did you purposely choose the smaller business market, right? It's a funnel, but a lot of these, they seem very focused on SMB style businesses.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
I hate enterprise. And I, you know, one thing I would say that we're struggling with is that we have a mix of customers that are super small mm-hmm. and they're kind of hobbyists. And basically it's like trying to build your house on quicksand. It's probably not a great idea. Because what happens is if they're not able to create businesses and not able to keep paying you, there's no way that you're able to grow a business. And so we're trying to figure out that balance of like, who's the ideal customer that is a, you know, small to mid market making money and doing well that we can assist and accelerate their business. I think what happens in a lot of software products is you just focus on one customer and then there's a byproduct of other customers, but it's hard not to get distracted or let them kind of help move you in directions that you might not want to move.
Yeah. Example of that, something that's come up recently.
Yeah. I mean, right now with, you know, with even with sumo.com, you know, we were free in the beginning and then we had so many sites. We had like one of the top Chinese blogs.
Okay.
We have the Chive. We have Airbnb. We have Tony Robbins. We have like all this array of different customers. And then we also have like literally like Jane's necklaces. And then we have like a gum company. We have some SaaS business. And so we had so many different customers and we had to do an analysis quantitatively with math and qualitatively just with observation about, you know, who do we serve that is staying with us and just like blown away with what we create? And how do we really focus on them and build the product for them and the marketing for them? And we've noticed that it's e-commerce companies. So it's really been focusing in more on that market for the sumo.com product. It's also with sumo.com, which has been interesting on the flip side, Michael, is that what of sumo.com are people actually using? And I think that's something that people don't really do well in their businesses. Sure. They keep adding more features instead of taking away features.
Oh, it's the easiest thing to do. Probably the biggest mistake too.
It's, you know, it's like one of the things that I've noticed. I do this stuff myself, man. It's like, hey, why don't you focus on one customer? You're like, well, because I don't want to give up that other thing, you know, but the way that I've looked at it and the way that's helped me process that is give it up for a small period of time. Give it up for 3 months, give it up for 6 months and look for what the results are. And you'll probably notice it's a lot better and things are a lot easier and you're growing a lot faster. But if you do it in a smaller chunk, it makes it easier for you to accept.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
Now, back to the show.
And actually, I try it.
So, yeah, what's the process that you guys use? Like, when you're looking at Tony Robbins, Airbnb, SMBs, what's the process you go through to decide what to focus on once you have enough data to decide?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that honestly, we could have probably spent months and just trying to decide things. But I mean, for a SaaS related business, what you're going to look at is like, all right, what's the customer with the best LTV and the lowest churn? I mean, that's all baked into your lifetime value, but who's paying us and who doesn't leave? And, you know, on a flip side, you could also say qualitatively, who is it easy when we get on the phone that they're like, yeah, here's my credit card. And it's people who say, I make money online. If I can get more emails, I make more money. And a lot of those people, you know, a blogger, they're great. I love bloggers. I blog too. But a blogger may make ad revenue. They may not may sell a digital product. They may have like not much revenue, even if they have a lot of traffic. So for them to justify spending money on certain things is not as easy. And so you have to figure out like who's the customer that like they can't run their business without you. And how do you just go focus on them?
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's where are those customers, a lot of them are on BigCommerce, Shopify, Magento, WooCommerce. And then what are the products they need? And then what's the kind of marketing that you have to do differently to appeal to them versus appealing to, you know, someone just starting a business, which I like, and they can actually use our products, but it's really like catering to the right customer. And even, you know, now if you look at our business, it's like, all right, our pricing has moved to serving that customer better. Our marketing has, our product has.
Is the hardest you've had to cut?
Sorry, what's that?
What is the hardest feature you've had to cut?
You know, it's kind of like life, man. I don't know if you've ever done this. It's never hard to cut until the moment you're about to cut it.
Right.
It's like what was it recently? I have these shoes and they're in my giveaway pile. I always have a giveaway pile by my door. And I'm like about to give them away. I'm like, dude, I love these shoes. I wear them all the time. And I'm like, dude, and so I put them on and I wore them and I'm like, all right, they're uncomfortable. And I'm like, this is why I don't wear them. And, you know, the same thing can go for our product. We've built a lot of apps with sumo.com.
Yeah.
And we had a look at, okay, look at data. Which products are they using? And on one hand, you could say, well, they're not using it because you haven't made it great and you can't haven't improved it. But on the other hand, it was like, well, what products are there just everyone flocking to? And everyone flocks to our email tools. How do I grow my email list? How do I message my list and so forth? And so we've had to cut, you know, our buy tool where you could, you know, sell things or our traffic exchange. And it's not that they're great. I'm sure someone else will actually build it and it'll do really well. But on the flip side of that, it's like, we can't do everything great. So let's just focus on things that are already working and then just make them work better.
Right. And how is the team taken to that, right? Have they enjoyed the iterative process? Was it an effort to get people out of that feature mindset?
I mean, dude, it's hard anytime you have to give up something, especially as a developer. I mean, they take so long to build something, to have it go away. But I think if it's to a greater purpose in the business and then they understand that and they're a part of the business, they're not just like, oh, okay, the boss just did it and I don't get it. It's actually something I've noticed. As long as people understand and you discuss it with them, they get it. And you know, you have like a debate about it. Like, hey, I don't agree. Okay, I get it. But yeah, we've had a, you know, you have to cut things. I think in general, one of my things I've been thinking in general lately is that if you're not saying no at all, you're probably not focused. So if people are running their businesses and saying yes to everything, they're probably not focused on the most important things.
How much do you say no daily, right? I mean, you get a lot of inbound inquiries for a wealth from speaking to the various products you're offering. How do you handle it?
Yeah, I think more people need to look at their calendars on a weekly basis and then do it with that as a practice. Like, what activities or meetings or things on a Sunday night are you not looking forward to during the week that you want to say no to and you just don't want to do? And just practice canceling them. Even for me, like, I'm doing more podcast interviews to promote Sumo and then you promote my show. But at this point, I'm like, man, there's other uses of my time. All right, now I'm just going to cancel ones in the future. And at the end of the day, like, it doesn't help the other person, doesn't help me.
Yeah.
But it's also helping me get what I want, right? Where, like, right now, my goal is to grow getting people to use Sumo. And you have to make sacrifices. And I think if you're not willing to sacrifice, you're probably not willing to get the things that you need.
It's fair. It's tough, but it's fair.
Yeah, I was talking about it with someone else, man. It's like people ask, how do you make money and how do you grow and all this other stuff? I'm like, well, how much are you suffering? Because if you're not suffering, you're probably not going to succeed. And I think suffering, people think of torture. Right. And I'm definitely not saying that. I'm only saying that there should be some struggle in the things that you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Do you find you've been too wide in your focus, or do you take kind of seasons of us for the various things that you're known for doing? Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
I think I just go through waves of obsession. So like I pick a focus, like our company has a singular metric. And then let's say for marketing, we have a metric that'll help towards that. And then I just kind of get obsessed with something. And I think what people do is they should have some imbalance in their work. Like where you're obsessed with something, like don't stop, like go as far as it can. So for me, like right now I'm focused on e-commerce. So I'm just like every day, all day, how do I do better in Shopify? Every day, all day, how do I get more usage out of it? And that obsession is actually, I think, really helpful. And then once I finish that off, you know, I'll find something else that'll help me grow.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. We all have a little bit to do this kind of about? What are you coming to find that you are looking forward to?
What am I looking forward to? In what way?
In the product. What can we for from Sumo?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm most excited about, we launched Live Chat last week, which I think is one of the best products we've put out in about a year. I'm really impressed and proud of the whole team. I'm excited for some more advancement in our email communication tools. Mm. So and it's interesting because people say, well, there's a lot of competition. And I'm like, there's competition with everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, there's competition in restaurants. There's competition in, Uber versus Lyft, Pepsi versus Coke. And, at the end of the day, you got to make things for a certain group of people that, you have some differentiation on. There's fancy Mexican restaurants and then there's cheap Mexican restaurants. And so with Sumo, I'm excited for the e-commerce people, like new creative ways to collect emails that we're working on, ways that you can send better emails, ways that like the email system is just automatically set up for you to just make you money magically. Those are the kind of things I know. Like, it's exciting. I think in general, one of the best things in life is you have to have things that you're optimistic about.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have some belief of, like, why you think the future will be better.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So, tell me, one of the things that we're focused on is product. How big is the product team behind Sumo?
Okay. So, it's something, actually, I'm a little bad with, if I have to be honest, where I actually think people discount all the people in the process. So if you look at it, like, we have a product. So there's technically 10 developers, but then you're like, okay, well, what about the designers? They're actually doing all the design UX work. So, all right, that's 4 people. Then you have to think, well, what about all the support success people? That's 15 people. They're all making sure that the product, when it gets to a customer, is great. And then you have to realize that there's a marketing team that actually has to make sure that everyone sees the product. And then you have to make sure that there's an office manager. I guess you see my point. There's office managers that make sure that there's, electricity in the office and we have, whatever snacks that people want. And I think sometimes for me, I'm just like, oh, there's 10 developers or 14 with design. But it really is everyone. It's a whole thing that has to come together to make a great product.
It's true. There's a lot of men that get passed down. Who is the ultimate, who... Oh, am I? I think it's the Zach.
You're breaking up just a little bit.
I lost my train of thought now. I'm sorry.
Go for it. Hey, you have an editor?
Yeah. So who drives, do you have like a product lead? Like what is your product team comprised of? Do you have a head of product? Is there a PM? It sounds like there's 4 designers, or is it kind of a holacracy where everyone's helping to drive the ship?
So the way that it happened originally is like me, my business partner, Chad, who's the CTO, and then Eric, who's one of our lead, he's been with us since day one. Yeah. He's one of our lead developers and senior lead, whatever title he is, he's awesome. So it was us three. And then as you grow, you kind of, I think what happens in companies is that you think you should be able to do what you did when it was just small. But the reality is that there's a reason that there's like all these famous and fancy people for behavioral organization. So I think one of the inflection points for us is when we hired a product manager and I was like, what do they do? Cause I was a product manager at Facebook and I still don't know what they do. But I actually am starting to see that a product manager, there's a vision from a founder. And then there's someone coordinating across all the teams and the design to make sure that products ship on time with the right products that we need to be building. And it's, it's a hard job to be trying to service and satisfy so many people across the whole organization. So I think that was one of our major inflection points. And then as we've grown, Eric has now become a lead engineer. So he's managing engineers instead of actually more day-to-day coding, which for us was a pretty big transition. I think Silicon Valley startups, that's like, oh yeah, of course you do that. But we're learning a lot of it on our own.
Yeah. No, it's cool to hear. It's cool to hear how companies grow and the structure that they grow into. It's not always the same, which is surprising,
Totally. Well, yeah, I think you have to figure out how your organ, cause some, like, let's say, you're a New York based company and you're all about designers and everything will be design driven, or your development company like GitHub, everything will go development style. And, Sumo, I would say I'm very marketing sided, but my business partner is very tech sided. So it's kind of a little bit of a mix of both. And the one thing I will say is that the process sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. because what happens is that it's going to, and I will say it sucks, but now I'm actually excited because we had this product manager, Eric, who's now doing great. But in the beginning, I'm like, what is he doing here? And it's not anything bad about him. Yeah. It's about me. And what it is that you have to understand, if you're trying to grow and do things with 20, 50, 100, 500 people, can't keep doing it the same way, but you have to recognize how can you keep improving. And I give Chad a lot of credit and Eric a lot of credit for all the shit I gave him for like, all right, how do we keep improving it? How do we keep improving it? And I think with that mentality of like, all right, well, this is what's not going well in our company. All right, how do we make that better? And keep asking yourselves that question has really helped us. You know, what I'm seeing is like a pretty damn high output of really impressive products. One book that that helped us from an organizational standpoint was called Five Dysfunctions of a Team. So I highly recommend that book.
What is what was the premise? What did you take into practice with how you guys organize things?
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened is that there wasn't as much trust across teams. There wasn't as much one of the communication across teams, and there needed to be tied to like, all right, what's the vision and accountability across every team? And I think with those things coming into play, we were able to have a higher output at a faster pace than ever before. So it's like, how do you build trust? How do you have a clear vision? And how do you hold people accountable to saying, hey, development, what's a realistic timeline that you're hitting in this quarter? Okay, you guys are accountable for it. You guys decided it. And doing a good job of working with teams to help each other. We're all part of the same team.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's something we forget, right? Especially when you're managing. It can be hard to see the other side. But also need to set goals to make sure we're advancing, right?
Yeah, you know, you do have to set goals. I mean, I think you know, I look back and I want to look like I use my time effectively, and I think that's what everyone wants. And so everyone needs to just be asking themselves the question, like, what's the best way I can use my time? How can I best help, you know, the things I'm in instead of complaining about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on here. We're coming up to the end of our time. But how can we keep up with you and where do we learn more about Sumo?
Yeah. So if you want to listen to me, Noah Kagan Presents Podcast. If you want to help growing your business, we have two things, appsumo.com, which is our daily deals for software for small business owners, and then sumo.com, which are free tools to grow your email list.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. If you want to find out more about rocketship.fm, go to rocketship.fm. It's pretty simple, right? Make sure you subscribe to this podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, so you don't miss future episodes in this series. And if you like today's episode, tell a friend.
Or two friends, or a lot of friends. We would love it if you would spread the word. And when you can, go to rocketship.fm and scroll all the way down and leave your email with us. We'll let you know about upcoming episodes, but we'll also get you in on a Slack channel with thousands of other product people and all sorts of other good stuff that we know you'll be interested in.
So go to rocketship.fm and sign up for our newsletter. If you enjoy this content, leave us a quick review or tell a friend or share the link on Twitter. Anything helps to get the word out about the show. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back here in just a couple of days.